and welcome to the Total Football Analysis podcast, where we hope to bring you just a little bit more tactical understanding about the game we love in the next hour or so. In fact, it'll probably be a little bit less than an hour today because it's only me and David Cellini who are going to be talking about momentum at Milan, critiquing the choice of Claudio Ranieri at Roma, and there's a little bit of Bayern Munich too. So, David, how are you doing?
Very good, Chris. Nice to join you again.
Good stuff. It's good to have you back. Lee's not with us today. That's 2 weeks in a row, so there's going to be rumours going out that he's on the transfer list, but we can officially deny them at this point, mainly because the transfer window shut. But anyway, that's us locked in for the next hour, and that's what we're going to be talking about. So let's get on with the show. Now, David, we're going to be talking about AC Milan, first of all, and they've certainly picked up their form in the recent weeks and everything. What are the main reasons for that?
It's a combination of things, actually. As you said, they're in good form. They came under a bit of criticism, I think, in the first half of the season with Gattuso's position being very... a lot of speculation about it and if he would even get sacked. I think it was around Christmas time. But then they came out of the Christmas break really good. They have 5 straight wins in the league in Serie A. And they're actually in the Coppa Italia semi-final as well. So they have a really good opportunity of going into the final and possibly claim a trophy with Juventus going out earlier in the competition. So it's really up for grabs for all 4 teams still in it. And in the league, they're up to 3rd. So they're in really good form. It's... The combination of things I talked about is his tactics remain. They basically use the same setup the entire season. Obviously, the players have built an understanding better, especially defensively, where they defend in a very compact 4-5-1. They use a positional orientation, as I call it, or a zonal orientation, where they move as a team, as a unit, all across the pitch, up and down together. Rather than man marking as many teams do in Italy, so they have a very compact defensive style which has grown to be really solid. They have good players in the defensive line in each position. The centre back pairing of Romagnoli and Musacchio is really good. But the main thing really is the impact of the new players coming in, and they really suit Gattuso's style of play. If you take a few examples of how he wants them to attack and how these new players have come in. They use a lot of rotations in their attacking play. So, for example, the right back, Calabria, usually pushes really high up on the right side with the right winger, Susu, coming inside to play between the lines. And then one of the midfielders drops out into the space vacated by Calabria. The new signing, Paqueta, does that really well and gives them a lot of quality on the ball when he's passing it, when he's dribbling. The same thing with Kessi, who usually plays on the right. So that's one thing. The wingers, Suso and Kalanoglu, usually they come inside to play between the lines, and with more technical players like Paqueta in the midfield, and then obviously a deadly striker as Piatek, then I mean they have that cutting edge to their play that has been pretty good all through the season.
The two main signings there, I mean, Piatek and Paqueta, have really appeared to have changed not just the way that Milan are playing, but they've certainly helped the other players around them improve their game as well. I mean, finally, they seem to have somebody who is reliable in front of goal. And then also the likes of Paqueta, they seem to have brought back Yoko's game on, as well as Kessi looking like the player that we all thought he was going to be. So those two signings have been sort of fundamental to this growth for Milan, surely.
Yeah, they really have been. If we take them individually, I think Piatek, as you mentioned, he's a proper goal scorer, and he's come in on the back of his Genoa form where he was sensational, and he's been equally good at Milan. I think there's a main difference with him and Higuain just from the mental perspective, because for Piatek to be at Milan, it's a big deal. It's probably something he really wants to be there. He wants to go on to even bigger clubs, or maybe not bigger, but better clubs in the future. Whereas Higuain, basically, he dropped down a level because he was basically sent away from Juve when they signed Ronaldo. So just there having someone who really wants to be there, who wants to lead that attack and score goals and get them moving up the table, that probably makes a big difference. Then of course his ability as a player, his finishing is fantastic. He's one of the best finishers absolutely in Europe. He can head the ball, he strikes it cleanly with both left and right foot. He's hungry, he's always sniffing for chances in the box, he's got superb movement in there, and his energy also in terms of pressing is something that's really impressive. So he's given them an edge there. Paqueta in midfield, also a lot of energy, he presses really well, he's aggressive. He's very clever at finding, these little gaps, these spaces between the lines. So if a team press Milan and press Bakayoko, as you said, for example, then Paqueta can easily just move in between the lines, receive it there, and then quickly turn and run at the defense. Because he's quick, he's got great skill, his dribbling is really good, and his passing ability is especially... These last third passes, I call them line breaking passes. When you thread the ball through a defense, he excels in that. And his combination play with Piatek, I think, is will only improve as the more games he gets in a Milan shirt. So both of them really good signings, perfect for Gattuso's 4-3-3, and key reasons really in Milan's rise up the table and up to third now. So they've overtaken the city rivals Inter, and as it stands now, they are the ones going on to definitely play in the Champions League next season.
And as you say, if we take it back to December, there was major talk that Gattuso was another dropped point away from losing his job. But again, we're seeing that if you give a coach a bit of time and bring in the type of player that can fit his system, that quite often it's amazing how then the team starts to play the way that he would expect them to play if he's given the tools to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. To be fair, I wasn't sure about him either. Milan have done a lot of these appointments where they appoint former players to coach a team. I think Seedorf has been there, Inzaghi has been there, and now obviously Gattuso. But what sets him apart is that he's been given time. He's been given time to work with the team. Now they've made some signings, as we've mentioned and talked about, that fit the way he wants them to play. And he's obviously shown that he can organize a team, he can organize a defense. And the thing is now for him to, basically the first time in his Milan coaching career now where he has some positive momentum going with him, apart from his early days when he did some good stuff at the beginning. But since then, it's been basically 7 or 8 months of negative work. If they can capitalize on this optimism, we don't know. Maybe next year they can even challenge even further. I don't think their squad is any worse than Napoli's, to be fair. And probably with new owners coming in last summer, they're probably going to go again and try and really challenge Juve. That will be difficult, as we see they're an 18-point clear now. So that's a big gap to make up. But give him time, give him one more season. We'll see what he can do. And as it looks now, he can really take Milan further.
But then doesn't that come with the inherent risk that so far Gattuso has got Milan into the position that he's got them into, because they're coming from a lower position where there's obviously the expectation that Milan do well, but they're not the top team. So they can play a little bit more on the counter. They can, as you say, set themselves up defensively and be difficult to break down. But there's going to come a point where if they start making the signings that money often leads to, and then the expectations go up because they're in the Champions League, because of their history, because they're AC Milan, there's going to be an expectation for Gattuso's style to evolve, surely. And we've seen so many times across teams all over the world, this is then where it becomes very difficult to break through into that next bit, where you go from where you are today, which has got you, you're starting to get a good reputation, but then you've got to tactically evolve. And is Gattuso good enough to take himself and Milan to that next step?
Yeah, and that is the question with every coach when you don't have a proven track record. I mean, obviously, if this was Guardiola's first season at Milan, we could be pretty sure that he would evolve the following campaign as well. We don't know with Gattuso. It's impossible to know because he hasn't been at this level before. He's coached at other clubs, obviously, but he hasn't been at a top club like Milan. That's the question that I tried to adhere to, that he can he sustain this now with the positive momentum? Can they build on this, and can they finish in the top four? Because that's what they need to do to return to the Champions League. Then they will be able to attract better players. In terms of their playing style, I don't think that changes much in terms of if they were perceived as a bigger team and a better team than they have been this season, because they have quite a dominant style already. They try to impose themselves on games, and they rarely set up just to defend. I mean, even when they play Juve, they try out to go out to try and take the game to them. So, in that respect, I think they won't change much. I think that's the style of football they're using now suits that the goals of being a top team. But it's all a question, as always, about mentality. Can he motivate them? Can he keep them hungry? Can he be the one to integrate new signings? You know, big name players. We've had a case with Higuain, and that didn't turn out well. So was that a question of Gattuso struggling to deal with the big personalities? Because Milan don't have the big person. There's a lot of young players in the team, a lot of players on the way up, but he has no real, you know, A-listers. There's no Modric, there's no Ronaldos, there's no Icardis in that team. So can he handle the big personalities? That's a question we need to see. If they sign some of those players in the summer, which they probably will if they're in the Champions League, then we'll get our answers to that next season. But yeah, it's always a risk. We don't know how good and how long this form will go on for. Maybe it's just enough to qualify them for the Champions League, and then it all goes bad next season. But as it stands, he's doing well, and everyone is positive around the club.
Good stuff. Okay, so that rounds up the little AC Milan section. We're going to hop over to the capital of Italy now and talk a little bit about the chaos that has been Roma this season. So, David, Roma have sacked Di Francesco in the last week or so, and they've appointed Claudio Ranieri as the caretaker coach. But also, not as widely talked about, has been the departure of the director of football as well, Monchi, who came from Sevilla and has got this great reputation of playing the transfer market in a way that only Monchi can play it. But Roma are in dire straits at the moment. So where did it all go wrong for Di Francesco?
Yeah, if we start with just on the pitch for Di Francesco, I think, or actually that's combined with Monchi, because they made a lot of changes in the summer. They had a good season last season. They finished third, I think, and they went to the semi-finals of the Champions League, and actually weren't far off really challenging Liverpool to qualify for that final. So it was a really good first season for Di Francesco in charge. However, as I said, in the summer, Monchi, they sold Strootman, they sold Nainggolan, and they sold Alisson, three really big players for them last season. And then they signed a lot of players to replace them. The 13 players, I think, came in. Obviously, not all of them first teamers. There were like three goalkeepers signed, for example. But of them 13, I think only Nicolò Zaniolo has proved really successful, the youngster. But then again, nothing was much expected of him. But he's been fantastic, especially in the second half of the season. Also, the goalkeeper Robin Olsen, who came in for Alisson, is nowhere near as good as Alisson was, but he's done all right. Otherwise, the players have been downgrades on what they sold and what they had last year, because most of them new players are young, they're on the way up, and they have struggled to replace the consistency of the likes of Strootman and Nainggolan. If we remember Roma's midfield last season, it was De Rossi sitting behind Strootman and Nainggolan. That's a really tough and really experienced and really strong midfield three. This season, they've mixed all of these combinations. Enzonzi's been in there. De Rossi's been injured a lot. They've had young Italians Pellegrini and Cristante. And there's been a lot of changes in midfield. I think Florenzi's played there at times as well. So there's never been a real consistency. And that's where it falls on Di Francesco, because he's changed a lot. I'm not against having a flexibility in the way you set up, but there's never been any consistent way of, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to play this way, this is our identity, and we just change the players. Basically, it's been changing players and changing identities from game to game. One game, they counter-attack, and next game, they try to dominate. And they haven't been as solid as a team defensively as they were last season. They haven't been as strong in the way they press. They've been all over the place in games. They have their attacking play has suffered as well. They're not playing with this kind of vertical passing style that we normally see from Di Francesco's teams that was so successful at Sassuolo. And that's that comes from the difficulty to find the right balance in midfield. With De Rossi injured and everything he brings with the experiences and his charisma and just his mere presence on the pitch, which brings out the best in other players and young players, which we've seen at times with Cristante and Pellegrini doing well alongside De Rossi. It's been tough for Roma to have that player who links it all together, that natural playmaker who can drop in front of the defense and receive the ball and just make the team play. They've failed to do that. One of the glaring examples of how Di Francesco has failed to integrate some of these new players is Brian Cristante, who was fantastic at Atalanta last season, but he played as basically an attacking midfielder, basically playing as a number 10 behind two strikers at times, or as one of three forwards. And now he's used in a midfield too, basically as a box-to-box midfielder alongside someone like Nzonzi or De Rossi, and he has not hit the heights that were expected of him. There's been issues to get the best out of Pellegrini at times. He's had some runs of form for a few games, which has been really good, but then he's been inconsistent and out of the team, and the midfield has been the big problem, I think. And obviously, as a team, if the midfield doesn't work, the attack won't work, and the defense won't work. So there's been poor protection for the defense, and the defensive issues that they even had last season in terms of some poor positioning from some players. I'm thinking of the likes of Kolarov, especially. He's a very attacking player, but who makes a lot of positional mistakes defensively. And the likes of Fazio, who's really good in terms of positions, but he's really slow and needs that protection from the midfield or from his fellow defenders. Florenzi is another one who struggles positionally. So last season, what they did well, they had De Rossi, they had Strootman, those experienced players who could cover these areas of weaknesses that some players had. This season, they haven't had that. So there's been no midfield protection. And then a defense that was already vulnerable has been ruthlessly exploited in some games. The main example being Fiorentina's 7-1 victory against Roma in the Coppa Italia, when Federico Chiesa run Kolarov ragged. So it's been tough for them. They've failed to address the midfield balance they had last season and failed to replicate that. And there's been no protection for the defense. And then the defensive issues have been clear to all to see throughout the season, basically, but especially in the last couple of months. Even though they've actually had some decent results. Before he was sacked now, Di Francesco, obviously after the Champions League game and the loss in the derby in Rome, they actually had, like, I think, 3 or 4 wins in a row. So they have been able to get some results still, but obviously it hasn't been good enough. And I mean, they're fifth. They should be challenging for third at least. They have a decent squad, and given what they did last year, they should never have been in this position. They should have been able to build on that. But that falls on both Monchi in terms of his decisions in the transfer market, but also on Di Francesco for failing to create a coherent team.
And it does sound very much like you've got a sporting director and the coach, and doesn't really feel like they're on the same page. Either that there's no clear identity to how Di Francesco sets up a team, so Monchi doesn't really know how to recruit, or Monchi's recruiting in a way that Di Francesco can't work with. So when it comes to that midfield balance, the amount of players that could play in Roma's midfield currently, that could even make Di Francesco's life more difficult because he's got too many choices to make. I mean, sometimes a coach's life is easier because of the bare bones that he gets to choose from. So he doesn't have to try too hard. He picks the players that he's got and he has to work with them. So do you think some of that's come into it a bit too much, where Di Francesco was given so many options that he didn't really know which one to pick at the right time?
Yeah, definitely. That could be an explanation. I think there's probably 7 or 8 players who could easily play in centre midfield for him. So it creates a problem. And also, I think just a feeling I have is that maybe I'm not sure if Di Francesco really was Monchi's main choice as coach. So what you said there, that maybe Monchi was building a squad he wanted, but not exactly the squad perfect for Di Francesco, because it was an easy appointment to appoint Di Francesco when Monchi came in. You know, coming from even though he'd been really successful in Spain, coming to Italy is a different country. Football wise, Italians consider themselves probably to be the best. So just because Monchi did well in Spain doesn't mean he comes to Italy with a great reputation. He needs to prove himself. So for him, it's easy to get some extra points with the fans to appoint a club legend, someone who were there when they last won the Scudetto in 2001. And then obviously Di Francesco did so well in that first season, so you couldn't really, you know, you couldn't get rid of him. You had to give him another season. And that's where I think the problems between them might have started, with Monchi building a squad he wanted for the future, and then obviously Di Francesco not being able to create his style of play with that group of players. Still, though, I think he should have, because that's a decent squad. I don't think, even though they've lost experience and they've lost some good players, that's a good squad, and they should have done a lot better than they have. But yeah, there's a bit of confusion really to what the goals were for them this season. Like, what one wanted them to do with all those players. It's hard to know what's happening in Rome usually, but this time it's been really hard to know what the plan is.
And then when they've got plenty of options for players and they're looking for a bit of consistent selection, shall we say, they turn to Claudio Ranieri, who, when he had limited options at Leicester City, produced fantastic achievement in terms of winning the Premier League. But he's known for, if you give him a club where there's lots of rotation possible, Ranieri's going to overindulge in such situations. So is this the right man to get Roma through the rest of the season unscathed?
Yeah, well, he's known as the Tinker Man, I think, in England from his spell at Chelsea. It depends. I'm not sure how long he was appointed for, if it was just the end of the season, but he will obviously bring some coolness with him. He seems to be a very calm personality, and that's probably needed in a city that's so chaotic football wise as Rome is, and especially when Roma's not doing well. Ranieri, I think, he's one of a few coaches. I think Ancelotti is another. Who doesn't really have a set system of how he wants to play. Rather, he adapts to the group of players he's given. Obviously, you mentioned Leicester with the incredible fairy tale he created there. But he had Jamie Vardy, and he basically got them to play that quick counter-attacking style, feeding Vardy in the channels with Mahrez popping up as well. That suited that team at that point. Then, I mean, he hasn't played the same way at Fulham. He didn't play the same way when he was at Roma in his previous spell, when he had the likes of Totti and Vucinic. So I think tactically he's very adaptable. He will create a system that he feels is right for this group of players. Obviously, it will be interesting to see who he picks with all those options. But in terms of how they'll play, it could be anything. I think he'll focus on counter-attacking. You know, there's a lot of quick players in that team. Some of them not used as much maybe as they should have. El Shaarawy is a good player. Kluivert looks talented. Saniolo has done really well. They have the likes of Perotti as well. So Patrick Schick is another one, is really good. So they have a lot of good players. They will probably focus on counter-attacking, I think. But in terms of how they'll set up, it's impossible to know with Ranieri, because he doesn't really, as I said, have a set system. He will adapt, and if that means they get a good run of results now and qualify for the Champions League, then he will have been successful. But otherwise, it's just, I think, basically making sure the club is back to some positivity going into the summer. That's needed for the club, especially with both Monchi and Di Francesco going straight away here. They need some consistency, and Ranieri will probably provide that.
Yeah, when you look at it from that point of view, and the fact that they've lost their two sort of key personnel at the same time, they do need an experienced pair of hands who can just keep it calm. Then Ranieri does make sense from that point of view, for sure. Who do you think should be on Roma's shortlist then to be their long-term coach? Because realistically, Ranieri is going to be there till the end of the season. And they'll be looking to recruit in the summer, I would have thought, for a longer-term option. So who do you think is going to be on their shortlist?
Oh, yeah, that's really interesting, because there's an obvious link to, again, try and appoint from Sassuolo with De Zerbi doing really well at Sassuolo at the minute. He's quite similar to Di Francesco, though, with a very, very attacking philosophy. And I think he's a bit more adaptable, though, tactically than Di Francesco is. So he's could probably be one option, but he has no experience of top clubs. So probably not, I think. But he could be considered, at least. I think it will be really interesting to see Gasperini given a chance again, the Atalanta coach. I think both me and Lee are mesmerized by the way he plays. We've written about him, talked about him in the past. So he could be really interesting to see with his very energetic style of play. He gets the best of out of basically any player that's in his squads. He even gets the likes of Ilicic to work hard defensively, which is I've never seen any other coach do. So with that young team they have at Roma and Gasperini's attacking style of play, that would be really interesting to see. Other than those two, if Sarri stays at Chelsea, he will obviously not be in the running. But if he leaves in the summer, that would be interesting as well for him to return to Italy, because obviously I don't think. The likes of Inter would go for Sarri. I think Antonio Conte or Simeone or even Jose Mourinho would be closer to getting a job at Inter. But Roma, yeah, probably Sarri could be an option there as well. So those three, maybe De Zerbi, Sarri or Gasperini, I think.
Yeah, I was going to throw Sarri in there as the curveball, just in case it does sort of combust at Stamford Bridge before the end of the season. Because there is every chance that he'll be looking for the new employment come next season. Okay, great. So we're gonna leave Italy now, and we're gonna head over to Germany and talk a little bit about the resurgence of Bayern Munich. So, David, at the weekend, Bayern Munich returned to the top of the Bundesliga. And realistically, they're not going to let it go from here, are they?
No, I don't think so. When Dortmund started dropping points, I feared for them. I think Bayern will get back and really, you know, breathe down the necks. They've been wobbling a bit, Dortmund, in the last couple of weeks. And losing games and drawing games, you know, going, I think they lost one when they were 3-0 up or something. They drew that 3-3 or something. So they obviously seem a bit nervous. It's a very, very young squad, so that's understandable in this moment. But yeah, Bayern, when they got the sniff, there was no doubt for me that they would, if not win it, they would really push them. And now they're top, so they're favourites for me, definitely.
It reminds me a little bit of when Manchester United was so dominant in England under Sir Alex Ferguson. And even when there was a 10-point gap, but United just started to get a little bit of form going together, you just had that sneaky feeling that eventually they were going to be right there. And just a team like Bayern Munich, even 3 points behind you, 4 points behind you, but in form, that's just going to add a whole bucket load of pressure onto that young squad at Dortmund. So it's no great surprise that they've gone top. But what have they actually done? What have they changed? What's Niko Kovac done to get them into this run of form? Because again, earlier in the season, there was talk that he could well be gone. The players didn't seem to be buying into his methods, and they were points behind Dortmund for a reason. So he must have done something good to turn this round.
Yeah, obviously. I must admit that I didn't watch a lot of them in the first half of the season. I've watched more of them now. So I'm not really sure what the issues were at the beginning of the season. But if you look at how they play now, they have a really good squad, obviously. They have quality players in each position, probably two of them in each different role on the pitch. And he's created a team. I think that that's very, very difficult to beat and very tough to play against, despite being very technical and attacking. I mean, the midfield is probably the best way, best place to start looking for that theory, because you have Xavi Martinez, fantastic defensive midfielder, has been key to buying teams for, I don't know, when he came, 2012 or something. So despite having a lot of injuries in the Guardiola years, he's been key for each coach that's been there. He can play in defense, but he's brilliant in defensive midfield. So he provides the steel and the power and the muscle, really, in terms of physicality in midfield, but also a lot of intelligence in the way he positions himself, in the way he reads how the opponent will play and how which passes he can intercept and stuff like that. So he's obviously key in there, but he has two real, what you wouldn't call, you know, tough players in terms of physicality in Thiago and James Rodriguez, who are really, really impressive, I think, at the minute. Both of them, we all know about the quality on the ball. They're both technical players, they're both creative, they could easily play as number 10s. Rodriguez basically does in most games anyway. But the two very attacking players, if you look at them. But defensively, they give a lot as well. Their pressing is quick, it's energetic, they read the game well in terms of what I think is one of the key qualities in what I've seen from Bayern and the Kovac is the counter-pressing. When they lose the ball, they win it back quickly. And Thiago and Rodriguez are really, really important in that style of defending, because they read the game well. They're quick to realize this is the way, this is the time to press, and they do it. And then with Martinez covering behind them or coming in alongside them to press, it's really tough to play against them in the central areas. And then what I've seen from him, from Kovac, is that he likes to target the wide areas, and Bayern have a lot of good wide players. They're very technical wingers, the likes of Coman and Serge Gnabry and Ribéry, obviously, and Robin is injured now, but he, we all know what he can do as well with the ball. But they have very technical players in the wide areas, and obviously they use Miller there as well, Thomas Miller. So they have a lot of quality in the attacking positions. And then they have really good fullbacks with Kimmich. I think is probably, if not the best right back in Europe, then at least one of the best. And then they have Alaba on the left, who is a fantastic player, whatever position you play him in. But with those two supporting wingers of that ilk, then you will create difficulties for defenses, especially if you consider then that you have that quality in wide areas by doubling up with both fullback and winger in the wide areas, and then also having that quality in midfield with Thiago and Rodriguez looking to find passes and play through the lines and between the lines and find those line breaking passes in behind the defense for Lewandowski to finish. Then it's a tough team to handle when they attack you. So they can attack you from different areas. That's what makes them intriguing to me. He's created a really complete team in terms of how they attack. They can cross the ball, they can play incisively between the lines, and they can counterattack at speed. So it's a really good team attacking wise. Defensively, as I mentioned, the counter pressing impresses me. They press really well away at Liverpool, so they've obviously worked a lot with that as well. So he just seems to have, with the time he's been given, be able to create a team that can play different ways. They can defend and be tough, but they can also overwhelm you by pressing high, counter pressing when they lose the ball, and then attack with all the weapons they have in their artillery.
And of course, we're recording this before the second leg of the Munich Liverpool Champions League game. So how do you feel that Munich will set up against Liverpool? Will they? I mean, you've mentioned that they've got several different styles that they can do there. Which one do you think they're going to focus on to get the result they need in the Liverpool game?
It's a delicate situation they have. The away game they played at Anfield was really impressive. They were really good. I was thinking Liverpool would probably, you know, before the games, I thought Liverpool were favourites. I still think they might be, to be fair. But Bayern really impressed at Anfield, I think, and kept a clean sheet, but they didn't score. So it's still 0-0, and that creates this delicate situation because they know they can go home to Munich and they just need to win the game, but if they concede, they have to score two. If they concede two, they have to score three. So because of the away goal rule. So it's a tough situation because they need to balance it right. Okay, let's go for the goal to win the game, but still not go too much so we get overexposed and concede. So I think he will probably set up similarly to how he did in England. They have a big blow with Kimmich out at right back, who was excellent at Anfield. So he's out, suspended. And then there are doubts for both Alaba and Kingsley Coman. Otherwise, they have a really good squad and basically a full squad, apart from long-term absentees like Tolisso. So it will be interesting to see how he approaches it. I would assume he will try and press Liverpool high again. They did that really well at Anfield, forced many mistakes. I think Alexander-Arnold and Robertson both made some big mistakes that could have been punished. Kovac really targeted Alisson as well with his pressing. Obviously, Alisson is often praised for his ability with his feet, and rightly so. He's incredible at building attacks from the back, but he also gets a bit overconfident in his own ability, and Bayern really managed to benefit from that because they pressed high and they forced him to have the ball while being pressed, and he made a couple of mistakes that really should have been punished by Bayern. If they would have, the game plan would have been perfect away from home. So they will probably look to press them. They did this in a very man-orientated manner. So they basically man-marked the defenders. And I think it was Jordan Henderson who were dropping in to receive the ball to stop any easy progression of the ball. So they're probably going to do that again. I think the counter-pressing will be key, as it was at Anfield, because we all know how dangerous Liverpool are at the counter-attack. So when Bayern lose the ball, it's about winning it back quickly or at least stopping the attack from Liverpool. So counter-pressing will be key again. And as I mentioned, they do that really well. So it will be key again. In terms of how they will attack, I think they will again look to target the wide areas and double up on Liverpool's fullbacks. Both Robertson and Alexander-Arnold struggled 1v1 against the Bayern wingers, who I think it was Gnabry and Coman who played on the night. And both of them did really well and managed to get past either fullback on many occasions. So they will probably look to target those areas again. And that's a really good area to target with Liverpool because we've all seen how narrow Liverpool's front three defense. They look to cut off central access for the opposition. So Bayern will struggle to build up through the center. But they overcame that pretty well at times as well at Anfield when they just basically bypassed that first pressure by going out to the fullbacks and then they could attack 2v1 against Liverpool's fullbacks. So they will probably do that again, target the wide areas in attack and look to find Lewandowski with crosses. Probably he will not look to go up against Van Dijk, but even if he does, and Van Dijk will probably win 9 out of 10, Lewandowski is one of the few strikers who could beat him in the air, I think. So defensively, pressing high, focus on the counter-pressing, and then in attack, targeting the wide areas and trying to use the advantage they can get of 2v1s against Liverpool's fullbacks.
I think the game's going to be very interesting to see how Liverpool set up as well, because although it's obviously very finely balanced from the Bayern point of view, equally it's finely balanced from the Liverpool point of view. And so I think so much of Bayern's game will be dictated by how Liverpool go about the game as well. And I would imagine that it's finely balanced in Klopp's mind as well about going on the front foot as well as looking obviously not to concede early than themselves. Away goal zone is always the key situation, I think, in a 0-0 first leg of this ilk. So should be a fascinating game. It's probably the one we've had the drama so far of the great comebacks of the games in a couple of the games so far. We've not had a very finely poised tactical battle yet, and I think this could well be the game that delivers that for us this week. So that's that brings us to the end of today's Total Football Analysis podcast. My thanks to David for his time and insight today, as ever. And again, for you guys, the listeners, for giving up your time to listen in. If you've enjoyed our chat, please do let people know about us on social media at Total Analysis on Twitter or Total Football Analysis Magazine on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss the next one, and leave us a review if you wouldn't mind. We're now on iTunes, Spotify, and most of the other places that you get your podcasts. And also this week, we are releasing our March magazine. So keep your eyes on the website, totalfootballanalysis.com, as well as promoting it non-stop on Twitter for when that officially goes live. But you can pre-order it as of today. We'll be back next week, and we are hoping to have a couple of extra interview podcasts for you over the next 7 days as well. So keep your eyes open for those. Thank you. We've been the Total Football Analysis Magazine podcast.
Hi, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you're still listening now, I think we can agree you might have done. If you want to get even more tactical analysis from us, you want to head over to totalfootballanalysis.com. Over there, you can get over 100 pieces of written analysis a month for as little as £2, as well as taking out an annual subscription to our monthly digital magazine. And because we like you, we are offering 10% off all subscriptions to Total Football Analysis magazine if you use the discount code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST. You use it at the checkout, and that will mean you get 12 months of website and magazine for just £45. That's a good deal, folks. I would cash in on that if I were you.